First, it's our weekly roundup of the biggest stories in national politics. Last night's special House election in Pennsylvania came down to the wire. Rex Tillerson's replacement as Secretary of State, CIA Director Mike Pompeo, is getting a close look in the Senate. And the House Intelligence Committee has wrapped up its investigation into the 2016 campaign. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think last night's Democratic win, probably in a Republican-leading Pennsylvania district, is a sign of things to come? Do you see a Democratic wave coming in November around the country here in Wisconsin? And what's your reaction to the firing of Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State and the nomination of Mike Pompeo? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is a correspondent at Reuters. Ginger, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, it looks like probably the Democrat won in this race, pending a recount. Can you put this in context? Talk about this district and what's happened there in the past.
This is a huge canary in the coal mine, potentially purporting real concerns for Republicans going into November's midterm elections. This is a district in the western part of Pennsylvania. And in 2016, President Trump won this district by 20 percentage points. That's a huge margin in any district. And what we've seen is a real shift, a turn for Democrats being really aggressive, coming out and vote in much larger numbers than Republicans. And it wasn't like Republicans were caught sleeping on the job here. The Republican National Party and some of its affiliated super PACs or supporting super PACs spent millions more than the Democrat did in this race. They've been running ads for weeks. This was a very aggressive effort. So they were aware that it was going to be a difficult one. They were spending with that awareness. And as a result, still weren't able to pull it out. And we can look at this race and say that's a real sign of Democratic enthusiasm and a real sign that Republicans aren't going to be able to buy their way to victory in November.
Yeah, looking at past congressional elections, the Republican former outgoing congressman who left because of a scandal, he was winning by 25, 30-point margins, except the last two elections when he won by 100-point margins because Democrats didn't even bother to run against him, right?
That's correct. So this is a place where in previous races, Democrats have even said, you know, it wasn't worth the money to field a candidate, couldn't find anyone in the district. Now, Republicans are saying today that, as you pointed out, this was a seat vacated by a member who left because of scandal, and that for that reason, that it sort of gave the Democrats a leg up, that their candidate, the Republican Saccone, was not the best candidate, that he failed to raise money as well as he should have, and that the Democrat was running as a moderate, and that picked off some of theirs. But that's really just spin. That's really just trying to make a not-so-great situation look better. This was Democrats picked a candidate that was representative of the electorate, and this is really a sign that that districts that looked impossible for Republicans, places where Donald Trump won 20% of the electorate, could be winnable in November. And I know that Democrats were back on the phones this morning trying to look at districts maybe they hadn't looked at before or raising money for districts that donors previously maybe thought were a long shot.
And Connor Lamb, the candidate, he was pro-gun rights. He said positive things about gun rights. He said he's personally opposed to abortion but respects the Roe versus Wade decision. That's the more moderate or conservative side. But he has been in favor of union rights, the Affordable Care Act, it sounds like. So not a full, but on the other hand, again, he said he wouldn't necessarily vote for Nancy Pelosi as the Democratic House leader. So he's threading some needles here.
He is threading some needles. I mean, there's no doubt that he is more moderate than most of the Democratic caucus. But the key here is that he would be a member of the Democratic caucus. And that's really what decides who the Speaker of the House is. So whether it's Nancy Pelosi or another Democrat, he's one more vote for that party to become in control of the chamber. And, you know, you'll hear a lot of people, particularly on the farther left, say, you know, he's so moderate that he might not be there for us on guns, although he has said he supports legalized abortion. He might not be there on some of those issues. But voting to say who is going to be the one to run the chamber, that's what really is important here. You're not going to get a gun bill that Democrats want on the floor as long as Paul Ryan is Speaker of the House. But with more Democrats and a Democratic Speaker of the House, even if you have some Democrats who might not vote for the bill, you have a better chance of getting that legislation done.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters for our weekly look at national politics. You can weigh in on what we've been talking about. Do you see a Democratic wave coming in November in Wisconsin and around the country? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Ginger, let's look at the dismissal of Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State now, and CIA Director Mike Pompeo nominated to take his place, or will be, pending a Senate review of his nomination. Do we know what he might do different than outgoing Secretary Rex Tillerson?
Yeah, so we have a better sense maybe of where Pompeo stands on a number of issues, given his time in the United States Congress as a member of Congress representing Kansas, than even maybe some other members of the cabinet when they've gone into these roles. We know that he is fairly conservative. He was quite outspoken on the issue of Benghazi during his time in Congress. And he is more in line with the president's thoughts on the Iran deal. This could be one of the biggest points of difference between Rex Tillerson and Pompeo, in that Pompeo is more on board with dismantling and gutting that agreement. We saw some resistance from Rex Tillerson to decertify pieces of it, part of the sort of technical process that we've struck this deal, but everyone has to keep signing off on it every so often. But Tillerson wanted to keep doing that. We may see a reversal in that process. And the other thing to be watching at is how the agency is administered. We know that Tillerson sort of let a lot of the agency be vacant or go follow. He wasn't filling key appointments. He wasn't filling key roles. There were offices that didn't really have direction, so the career were sitting around sort of waiting for direction. Without direction from the politicals, they couldn't do anything. He was very isolated within the agency. He didn't come out and speak even to the public very often. And that created a lot of turmoil within the State Department. So we'll be watching closely to see if Pompeo starts filling some of these vacant roles, starts taking a more engaged role in how these agencies operate. He is conservative, and he does support a smaller government, so he could continue to try to whittle away at some of the rank-and-file numbers in the agency. But he will have to bring his own sort of philosophy to how that agency is run.
He would have to get confirmed by the Senate for this position. And at least one Republican, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, took issue with his nomination. Here's a listen to Senator Paul.
I think it goes against most of the things that President Trump campaigned on, that the unintended consequences of regime change in Iraq actually led to instability in the Middle East and actually made the conditions worse in the Middle East. So it perplexes me that he is now nominating for Secretary of State someone who has advocated and pushed for regime change in Iran.
And Mike Pompeo, regarded as a hawk, more of a hawk on various foreign policy issues than Rex Tillerson was, is it likely that other Republicans might share that concern in the Senate?
I would, it's safe to say that Rand Paul is often on an island of his own, especially when it comes to foreign policy, often out of step with at least his Republican colleagues and sometimes his Democratic colleagues as well. I think that Pompeo's foreign policy being a hawk is a bit more in line with the rest of the Republican caucus than it is with Rand Paul. But elections have consequences. And just like we were talking about Pennsylvania and this sort of upset we believe is unfolding in the House race there, we remember not so long ago Doug Jones elected in Alabama the Democratic senator in what was a safe Republican seat. And that's one less vote that Mike Pompeo might have when he comes up for consideration in the Senate. And that makes Rand Paul being potentially potentially unwilling to support him, even more consequential. This could be very tight. Now, we know historically Congress tends to approve the nomination of former members of the body, and so it would be quite unusual to see them not approve Pompeo. It may be that Rand Paul's trying to get concessions on something. This would be the time to do it. But this is going to be a tight one. It's going to be difficult, and they're going to try to move very quickly to get this done, potentially within the next month.
We're talking to Ginger Gibson, correspondent at Reuters, looking at some of the top news of the week in national politics. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Coming up, we're going to look at the House Intelligence Committee decision to wrap up the investigation of the 2016 campaign, saying no collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign, and saying Russia wasn't intentionally trying to help the Trump campaign. Was the committee right to wrap things up? Was that the right call? Do you expect other ongoing investigations still to go on for a while? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can still share your thoughts also on the election in Pennsylvania yesterday. Still some counting to do there and the possibility of a Democratic wave. 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. Right now, we continue our conversation with Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the top stories this week in national politics. To your calls now at 800-642-1234. Patty is on the line in Eau Claire. Patty, hi.
Hi, how are you all doing? Beautiful show. Well, there's three things I think that's going to take the Democrats completely over the top. First is, these steel tariffs. People are underestimating the far-reaching effects that these are going to have. This is going to affect so much of industry in our country. First, we don't have a lot of industry. Let's face it, and the steel is the biggest of the domestic industries, and we are hitting the heart of our economy right now, and we're hitting it way too hard. This is a heart attack out in the middle of the desert. There's no help for it. So that's going to hurt jobs. Going to take a lot of his following away. The second thing is that the Republicans are deserting their sinking ship. They're going one by one by one. The wall is breaking down. They are leaving the old loyalty. They're getting away from it. And the third point is really the most important. There's never been a wave of people in this nation gathering, Democrats and Republicans, against a singular figure like there's going to be and like there is.
Patty, there's a lot there. A couple points there, Ginger. Let's talk about Democratic mobilization. Is Patty onto something there?
He is. He's right that we see an enthusiasm, we see mobilization, we see Democrats turning people out with a simple unhappiness with the president. And I think the other key thing that Patty brought up here was talking about tariffs. We are told, sources tell me, that the White House is considering even more sweeping tariffs targeted at China, and they could be on consumer goods like clothes and footwear and toys and electronic devices, the things that you buy at your local Target and your local Walmart. And those prices could be going up in short order before back to school next year and before folks go to the polls in November. And when people feel that in their pocketbook and they know that this was a decision by the president, there could be some political retribution for that.
And staying with tariffs for a minute, Ginger, you wrote about ads being taken out by a farm group targeting President Trump's neighborhood or the neighborhood of a place he stays a lot, saying, hey, there could be backlash that's going to hurt farmers. Tell us about that.
Farmers are likely to be the most aggressive voice against the president's trade policies. We see this ad. They're spending $500,000 targeting the president's home, Mar-a-Lago, in Florida, and then also Washington, D.C., trying to get him to see. And it's really a farmer talking straight to the president and saying that his trade policies are going to be bad for farmers. We know that the Europeans and the Chinese are all considering retaliatory efforts against the U.S. for the steel and aluminum tariffs. This could hit wheat farmers. This could hit soybean farmers. This could hit whiskey makers. This could hit dairy farmers. You know, Wisconsin has so many dairy farmers, it's so important, that export cheese and milk. And this could be a real problem for them if those retaliations start to hit those farms.
Let's go to another caller. Patty, thanks for the call. Go to Jim now in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I just wanted your guest to comment. The fact is that what happened in 2016 wasn't a Trump victory. We fail to remember what a deeply flawed candidate Hillary Clinton was. I mean, she was under federal investigation for a substantial period of the campaign, and how the Republicans have the candidate who's under federal investigation. So if we see a blue wave, it will be a negative Trump wave more than specifically a return to Democratic Party affiliation. And I see that happening for the reasons I just stated. I'd be interested in your guest comments.
Interesting. Ginger, what do you think? In 2016 and maybe 2018, Jim seeing not so much a vote for somebody, but a vote against somebody.
I think Jim is onto something, and I think it's difficult to parse how much of this is folks showing up at the polls to vote because they like someone's healthcare policy, or they like their economic policy, or they dislike the tax bill, and how much of it is showing up to vote because they dislike Hillary Clinton or they dislike Donald Trump. Most of the time, there's no voter who's voting just simply on one of those things. In fact, we know a lot of people voted for Donald Trump that didn't like him. Because they thought he could get something done and they thought he could make changes. So it's never just, very rarely is it just one or the other. And even if you've got a candidate folks don't like, if you aren't putting forward policies that people can get behind or even just live with, it's not going to help you out much. We are seeing a lot of Trump-motivated voters, voters who are voting against Trump, but we're also seeing a lot of voters in our polling telling us that a lot of people are concerned about healthcare, a lot of people concerned about jobs, a lot of people concerned about what's going to happen in the coming years on guns. And so those things are all, I think, factoring in when people are showing up on Election Day and deciding who to vote for.
Jim, thanks for the call. We're talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the top news in national politics. I want to get to a couple more stories, Ginger. A big one, the House Intelligence Committee, one of the multiple investigations looking at Russian interference in the 2016 election. The Republican leadership of that committee says, yep, we're done. What were their findings?
They said that there was no signs of collusion and that any contacts between the Trump campaign and Russians were maybe just bad judgment and not an effort to influence the election. They want the case closed and they want to go home. Or more importantly, to just not be in the middle of the case anymore. There are others investigating. There's the Mueller investigation, which has already brought indictments against some Russians for trying to influence our elections in 2016. And Democrats, of course, are very unhappy about this. They think that the investigation should keep going. But to be honest, that venue, the House Intelligence Committee, so partisan divided, so already entrenched in sort of partisan positions, may have never been an arena that could have come to some actual conclusions that would not have been criticized by other sides. We've seen in the past these committees able to work together. This time, the committee was not working together. There was not cooperation. And that makes it very difficult to make any result, had they found something or not, believed by both sides when there wasn't that cooperation. So it might have been, at least in that committee, an investigation that was spoiled from the start. Maybe left to those outside of that really partisan political arena.
Yeah, it seems like the House Intelligence Committee right now is going to be one of the worst places to work in the country in some ways.
Yes. They were talking about erecting a physical wall through the middle of the office to keep Republicans and Democrats on opposite sides.
You're not joking. They were literally talking about a barrier between the two parties on this committee.
Yes, they have abandoned that plan, it appears, but it really speaks to the sort of deep unhappiness and division within that committee, and a committee that has historically been very bipartisan. I think it's going to take a lot of remedying of those relationships on that committee before they're able to do some of these things again that they have done in the past working together.
I want to touch on one more story. There have been immigration issues coming to California this week. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, targeting the Oakland mayor for making comments warning people of an upcoming Immigration and Customs Enforcement raid. And now James Schwab, a spokesperson for ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, based in San Francisco, resigned in protest, in effect. What led to that?
He resigned. He argued the response that the Department of Justice and ICE wanted to put forward was that more than 800 illegal immigrants who were criminals were not captured because the Oakland mayor had made those remarks. He said that that was a gross overestimate, that these raids never capture everyone they seek out to capture, and there's no way to know just how many people avoided being captured because of this, and that he was not going to keep repeating this incorrect line. I think that we're seeing a lot of tensions, a lot of strain within these agencies. I think anyone who's ever worked knows that when there's chaos and confusion and trouble at the top of your company or your operation, it trickles down. And I think we're seeing that in this example of a rank-and-file employee, a career employee who had been there through multiple administrations, who just said, I can't do this anymore. When people talk about chaos at the White House, it's sometimes treated like it's such a small thing and it's only in that building. But we are seeing it reverberate through the administration and through the career folks who have long served presidents of both parties.
Coming up, by the way, tomorrow after 4:30, we're going to talk about the president's trip to California and his border security demands. And Ginger, briefly, as we wrap up, there are a lot of twists and turns. We don't necessarily know what story is coming next. What are you watching for next?
I'm watching for these tariffs that we could see come out of China. And I'm watching for Democrats and Republicans' response to this Pennsylvania result. I'm hearing privately Republicans say they're very concerned and they have to do something. But if they don't start changing some of their tactics and rethinking, it could be really bad for them in November.
Ginger, thanks as always for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ginger Gibson, correspondent for Reuters. She was with us to recap some of the week's biggest stories in national politics.